Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We are loaded up today. Can you feel the strain? An Oklahoma grad doing an amazing job covering Nebraska, Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey. We're going to get his take on Disco Bob Diaco returning to the coaching sideline. I'll call him Dr. Petey's Oklahoma Sooners. Derek's also headed to Chicago with Jacob Padilla for Big Ten Basketball Media Days. So we're going to get locked in on Nebraska basketball, Nebraska football here in about 15 minutes with Derek. Brad Edwards in 1 hour, and plenty of room for you. No Shuey today, no Mike Shuhart. We'll get caught up with him next week and hear from him. We are excited to have you. Can join us today on Hail Varsity Radio, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865, numbers to get in. And also follow us and find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hail Varsity, and can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. We'll play some of the practice thoughts from Greg Austin and Coach Held coming up here, but interesting article with CBS Sports and what stock to buy. You got three teams with three coaching changes that are having really bad years: Nebraska, UCLA, and Arkansas. We'll get into that. And I want to know, what side of the ball are you going to buy stock in on Saturday? If Nebraska wins on Saturday, it's because of what side of the football? Is it going to be the offense? Is it going to be the defense? Will special teams shock and awe you to the point where they make a play, stopping a return or covering a kick or blocking a field goal or whatever, right? Whatever you do on special teams to prevent getting pinned deep and having to drive 90 yards? Or is it the other side of things where you get a big-time field goal or you get a big-time kick inside the five and Northwestern screws up? They usually don't screw up. This is the anti-Nebraska Nebraska's facing Saturday at 11.
Northwestern, I tell you, they're a well-coached football team. They're strong, they're physical, they're smart. They don't beat themselves, kind of like Wisconsin. Their front four is just strong, tough guys. And then, their linebackers, number 42, is a really good player. I think he's a sophomore captain. He's a 6'4", 240 guy that can run and is tough. I mean, you know where they're going to be, but it's hard because they're so well coached and they just do a really good job within their scheme. So, but they're just a really good football team in the sense of they play it how you're supposed to play it. Tough, physical, smart, disciplined, where we want to get to.
Man, there was some longing in the voice where we want to get to. He just listed off all of the positive attributes of Northwestern. Why they're 2-3. They could be 3-2. Coulda. I get it. But the answer is, well, give me all three phases, right? That's a big ask on Saturday, isn't it? I mean, is it? It is, right? This team is going to be what they're going to be. Will they get better? Yes. How much better is it? You know, define good, Saul Goodman says, right? Listen, they're going to be problematic defensively. They just are. They don't have enough speed, and they are not big enough and strong enough and deep enough to stop the run game against Iowa and Ohio State, right? Let's just call it like it is, maybe even Michigan State, depending on if L.J. Scott finds a Band-Aid or not to run the football. Everyone else is beatable. Saturday's winnable. Minnesota's winnable. Bethune, winnable. Illinois, winnable. I mean, if you let your mind travel down that path, the only game on Nebraska's schedule that is the lock of the millennium is Ohio State covering whatever number pops up Danny Burke. Other than that, Nebraska could piece enough together. But, man, you're on blind faith because you haven't seen it and you don't know if you're going to because you've been waiting five games to see it. So I, again, go back to the original question. What side of the ball is going to prevail, do well enough to carry the other two phases of this team on Saturday? Maybe Monday we'll come back and, hey, way off. Defense played well. Special teams was better. Offense was not into self-inflicting harm. But I don't believe that. They just kind of are. And we'll hear from Greg Austin here shortly, but I don't know. I think I have seen enough movement and progress that if I've gun to my head, I've got to go. The offense, if Nebraska wins Saturday, is going to be the reason why. You know, Mitch Sherman gave us some reasons yesterday. Good stuff from Mitch as always. I think offensively, between what they can do with Maurice Washington in space, with Divino Zigbo running the football, Mikael Wilbon always does well against Northwestern. He is hyped and he's amped and he wants to play his home state school. Typically, he does well if given the opportunity against Illinois and against Northwestern. He'll get a look. He's had better practices. He loves going back home to Chicago. Spielman, that's his hometown as well. I know he grew up with Spielman, but originally Spielman from Chicago. So guys want to show out in front of their home crowd. Offense will do it. And what's going to have to happen is it's going to come down to both quarterback plays. You got a bit of a gimpy Thorson that is not what he was a year ago. But, man, he's smart. He's decisive. He's experienced. He's able to throw the football really, really well. His completion percentage is decent. And for them having no-run game with Larkin retiring, for him to do as well as he's done, especially against Sparty on the road, he's coming in hot. So can Nebraska make him uncomfortable defensively? I don't know. I don't think so. Consistently enough. I think he's going to get his. But let's talk Adrian Martinez. Let's talk about what Adrian's been building up to doing. Freshman mistakes, yes. Some shakiness at Wisconsin, yeah. Better start, but you had the absence in offensive production for a long stretch in Purdue and for a long stretch against Wisconsin. I think that window continues to shrink with the Nebraska offense being out of sorts. I think they'll have more rhythm. And I think they'll keep growing. And I think Adrian's going to be a guy that's thrown for three Bills the last two games. And he's ran for good numbers. The thing that is going to be key is when Northwestern gets pressure on him, what's he do with it? Does he throw it away? Does he eat it and take a bad sack? Does he throw it away and is there a holding penalty? I don't know. I just think Nebraska can get really good and improve quarterback play Saturday to match or exceed what Thorson's doing. I know that's a big ask. But right now, Nebraska's got a better chance of being a two-dimensional offense than Northwestern. As up and down as Nebraska's defense has been, I'll take the offense that gives me guys like a Mo Washington in space, guys like a Spielman, guys like a Stanley, guys like a Ziggy, guys like Adrian running the football. If a win happens, when and if that win happens Saturday, it's going to be because you're going to have less penalties. First and foremost, less, not fewer than Northwestern, but not as many back-in-the-knife type penalties. And I think Nebraska can get it done because of quarterback play and the offense having an answer, because they are just better athletes. As good as Northwestern and as sound as Northwestern is, I think Nebraska's got some guys that match up very favorably.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's going to come on the offensive side of the ball if the Huskers are going to win this game. I mean,
you just don't trust any other option, do you?
No, their defense is wildly inconsistent. You cannot trust the defense for Nebraska. Northwestern's going to get theirs on the offensive end at home. Like you mentioned, Clayton Thorson, he's been doing his thing. They'll be fine. Northwestern's defense is nothing to just shrug off about, however, either, because they've held Michigan State, Michigan to very low scores. So that's why it's a necessity that Adrian Martinez and company on the offensive end do their part and keep Nebraska in this game. So if they happen to pull it off, cover, whatever, it's going to be because of Nebraska's offense.
I think so. And, you know, if we're talking about Nebraska and we're looking at their remaining schedule, if you're going to rank winnable to no chance, snowball's chance, Ohio State's that game. You don't feel great about Iowa. Who knows what Michigan State's going to be. Minnesota's scrappy. They hung in there against Iowa. I think this is a good Iowa team. I think this is probably a nine win Iowa team or better, depending on what they do at Indiana. That's going to be a tough ball game. Indiana's a good club. Indiana's at least a 7-win bowl team. At least they should be, based on how they've played. Maryland is a team that has beaten Texas and has some pretty impressive skill guys. They're not as disciplined as they need to be, but Maryland's got some players. They're good. They're probably better than Michigan State, to be honest with you. Michigan's coming on, and they're really, really feeling it, right? I mean, that was a good comeback win against Michigan. They are going to square off against Wisconsin. I will be shocked if Wisconsin wins that. I think Penn State's going to drill Sparty. So you've got your usual suspects with Ohio State, Michigan State. Who's in at three? Not Michigan State anymore. It's going to be Ohio State. It's going to be Michigan. It's probably
Penn State or Wisconsin.
Penn State or Wisconsin.
Probably lean toward Penn State. I shifted after how they played against Ohio State, my thoughts on Penn State.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd probably put them a little bit over Wisconsin now.
I think so, too. I mean, I think Wisconsin's probably a distant fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Behind Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, right?
Yeah, I'd probably lean toward that.
Yeah, that's your three.
Because you can't trust Michigan yet.
No, but I still like Michigan, and I think they'll prove it over Wisconsin. Then you have Wisconsin, and you take Wisconsin over Iowa because they won head-to-head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you could make an argument for Maryland or Indiana in there. And we'll see what Northwestern does the rest of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put Indiana or Maryland that high, though. Maryland just beats Texas. That's their thing, though. No, not saying they're a bad team, not knocking them off or anything, but I don't know if I'm ready to put them over Michigan State.
Here's the thing, though. Maryland, like, had some dudes that were faster and stronger and shiftier than the Michigan D, right? Michigan's defense is end-all, be-all, right? That's the measuring stick that Nebraska's gone against this year. And, you know, I know it was a 7-point game and there was a special teams answer and then it turned into a 21-point win. But still, I mean, it was 42-21 on the road at the Big House. Maryland battled back. I mean, that thing never got to 56-10. I mean, there was still some fight in the Fear of the Turtle group, despite all the crap they've gone through. So we'll see. I mean, you might be right. Maryland may fade. Indiana may fade. But right now, they're looking okay. I mean, they're two teams you really didn't know much about or count on when you're talking strength of the league. And if you're Nebraska, I mean, you put them above Illinois because they're Nebraska. You put them above Northwestern. You'll see head-to-head here shortly. You put them above Minnesota. I mean, this is the zip code they're in right now. How much better do they get, and what's it look like? And it starts Saturday. And you're going to need it from your offense, man.
Yeah, despite the record, though, just going back really quick, I don't know if I would put Indiana over Northwestern or Minnesota. Like, if you were to actually put them head-to-head,
you know why
I think
I'm
Northwestern's
doing that?
A tougher
You know why I'm
team.
Doing that? Because of what Indiana did against Ohio State. And a lot of that's probably being flat after the comeback against Penn State. But Indiana's track record, they match up well against the Buckeyes. They just do.
It's like Texas and Maryland.
Right. I mean, Maryland's – nobody really goes to Maryland and gets out alive. It's crab cakes. It's football. It's sailing, right? It's – I don't know. But I think the Big Ten's a little bit deeper than they have been in past years.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And with Nebraska, we'll see if they can kind of climb their way up Saturday against Northwestern. We'll hear from Greg Austin coming up in about 20 minutes. Comments from him. I enjoyed his comments on Cam Jurgen and the attention he's paying to how the ball is being snapped is priceless. We'll get caught up with Derek Peterson of Hail Varsity. That's coming up. Brad Edwards of ESPN is on the way next hour. Tomorrow it is confirmed. It is locked. It is loaded. Said the Pirate today. We'll have the Pirate tomorrow. That'll be a lot of fun. You can join us on this Wednesday, 466-3776. 466-3776, 800-825-5865. What phase of the game carries Nebraska to victory on Saturday?
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Comments from Greg Austin and the mother of all comparisons coming up. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. He is tremendous with HailVarsity.com and magazine. He is off to Chicago for Big Ten Basketball Media Days tomorrow, and then he'll stick around for Nebraska Northwestern coverage. Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. Derek, is the toothbrush packed?
Nothing is packed.
Good answer, I guess. I got to know this. I need the lowdown from all your bros down at OU on the promotion of one Robert Diaco.
Okay.
How are you dealing?
I am it's weird. So the Texas game was like oh my God, Oklahoma hasn't had like a competent defense that can stop anybody in like 5 years. And it's like they need to fix that. And then Diaco comes in to the picture, and it's like, you know what? Just tank the whole season. If this is the downfall of Oklahoma, if Bob Diaco and the strain and no reasonable reason is the downfall of Oklahoma, I'm all here for it. Apparently, he's going to be the one calling plays for them. He might be looking at an audition for the future defensive coordinator job. And if that's the case, I am all the way here for it. So I will be very excited. He's going to do media now. He's going to be available to people to talk. I'm very excited to see how this Diaco tenure kind of rolls along with Oklahoma.
Isn't Ruffin going to be like breathing on his shoulder a little bit at least? I mean, Ruffin and there's history. I mean, Ruffin's there to kind of caretake, isn't he? It's not all on Dirty Bob.
Well, so Ruffin hasn't called plays in like 10 years. Like the last time he called plays, he was at Texas Tech, like in 2009.
Right, with Leach.
Obviously, he was the head coach at East Carolina when Lincoln was there, so there's that relationship there. But Ruffin is more of the coordinator in kind of title. From my understanding of the situation, they didn't want to make Diaco. They didn't want to promote Diaco that quickly after he'd just been hired as an analyst spot. So he's going to be on the field. He's going to be handling play calling duties. Ruffin will be up in the booth, and they want Diaco's energy on the sideline. This is all set up perfectly. I can't wait for it.
Let's switch to Nebraska because people might be punching the radio. Forgive me, but
there's no reasonable reason to think that that's happening.
No, I know. I just wonder if he's made the adjustment from year one to year two with the fact that the mic will and does clip on the three-quarter zip versus the hold. I'm just wondering. Nebraska, how are you feeling about Saturday for Nebraska football?
Better than I have the last couple weeks. You know, maybe that's just getting swept up in the optimism that Scott Frost had post-game. But, you know, I'll tell you, I was not expecting him to be as optimistic as he was after the Wisconsin game. And I walked in there, sat down, and he comes in, and I was like, okay, this was unexpected. I was expecting him to be a little bit more somber, expecting, you know, wondering what the theme of that press conference was going to be. And it turned out that he was like, look, I mean, we're not ready for this team yet, but we've got some talent on the field. And talking about, you know, they cleaned up the stupid mistakes that have been killing them. They obviously still had a ton of penalties, ton of flags, but, you know, those are things that they had at Central Florida. He said they're just not ready, or they're not good enough offensively to make up for those, but they are pretty darn good offensively. And you saw at the start of that Wisconsin game that when the defense is fresh and not being worn down over 2 hours by, you know, Jonathan Taylor and Wisconsin's, you know, supernova offensive line, it doesn't look terrible. So you go up against a Northwestern team that doesn't really have a rushing attack right now and is going to have to rely on Quayton Thorson to throw the ball around the yard and score some points for them through the air. I think that kind of sets up nicely for Nebraska. I think they hit 30 points for the first time this season. I think this could be a shootout. I think they've got a really good shot to get their first win.
I'm kind of leaning there. We were starting the show off talking about, all right, what phase of the game can carry Nebraska to a win? And there's no safe bet based on the first few games. That said, you're feeling better about the offense and maybe that inconsistency from Adrian shrinks again, right? I mean, you saw a good open against Purdue, and then the offense was doing nothing for a long period, and then it got hot. You saw defense hang on for their dear life to hold the score down to 6-0 before Nebraska got rolling with some big plays to make it 6-3. But maybe these threes turn into sevens, and you get consecutive scoring drives for the first time all season, right? I mean, it seems like Adrian's moving that direction. You know you have the advantage to get people in space. You got a guy like Washington. You have a guy like Ziggy. I think Wilbon will play well in front of his home crowd. And I think the offensive line, they're not going to be great, but is it fair to expect? Okay, they went from 11 penalties to 10. Can they knock it down to 7? Okay, maybe 6. I mean that's the question. Who's penalized less, or in fewer key situations may win this thing. I mean, Northwestern doesn't screw up at all.
Yeah, Northwestern's the least penalized team in the Big Ten. You know, we got asked this question in our mailbag that's going to get published on HailVarsity.com pretty soon. If Nebraska wins, will it be, you know, a significant decrease in penalties? Will it be more offensive consistency, or will it be the defense creates more takeaways? And my answer was basically process of elimination. Nebraska hasn't had fewer than 10 penalties in a single game this year. I don't think you're just going to magically flip a switch and that's going to disappear overnight. You obviously cleaned up the dumb ones for the most part against Wisconsin, and you still had 10. I think they were flagged 12 times, with two of them being offsetting. Offensive consistency is another thing that I can't say it's just going to magically change, just because this entire season, you know, they've been up and down. And I think you're going to get that, a little bit of that, when you're playing with a true freshman quarterback. Like, Adrian's still learning. Like, that was his fourth game as a college football quarterback. So he's still learning. The thing for me with this game is, can Nebraska's defense finally create some takeaways? So DiCaprio Boodle leads the conference in passes broken up, right? He's got 10. He doesn't have a single interception. I don't really know how that happens anywhere outside of a team that is as unlucky as Nebraska is. Because, like, when you look at their turnover margin, like, they are incredibly unlucky. Expected turnover margin is, like, minus 0.5, and their actual turnover margin is 6. The opportunities are there for them to create some takeaways. They just haven't done it yet. And Shenander talked about that a little bit this week. You know, they asked him, how do you get guys from celebrating after a pass broken up to being upset that it's not an interception. And he's like, we need them to get there. That's the thing right now. Like, it's instinctual for the cornerbacks to do the kind of, like, no, throw their arms out or whatever, you know, after they get a pass broken up. And Shenander's on the sideline thinking, that needs to be an interception. They've had plenty of opportunities to get takeaways, and they just haven't capitalized on them. You know, you look at the Antonio Reed tip in the Purdue game that could have gone for a pick six, and they just don't get it. Like, they're fingertips away from these things. So if I'm looking at something that has the highest potential to change against Northwestern, I think it's takeaways, because A, the opportunities are there, and B, like I said, with Thorson, they're going to be going against an offense that's going to throw it around a ton. They're going to be going against a guy that has 5 interceptions in 5 games this year and has, like 30 in his college career. You know, if they can figure out how to get some takeaways, they can figure out how to flip field position and have some advantageous starting field position for once this season. And I think the change at punter will help that a little bit. But if they can create some takeaways, if they can create some extra scoring opportunities for their offense, like, you feel pretty good about this game.
Derek, a sliver of hope for the Huskers offensively besides Adrian Martinez, of course, was Maurice Washington, and everyone saw a glimpse of his potential against Wisconsin. How do you expect him to be utilized this weekend? What is your prediction for his performance?
I think they're going to continue to just ease him in. You know, we were talking with Troy Walters today, and he said they don't want to overwork him. It's kind of a weird, to me, it's kind of a weird path to take with Mo, because when you watch him, like, clearly he's a very talented back. Clearly he is the future in Nebraska's backfield. But I can kind of make sense of slow playing it, just in the sense that, you know, his background before getting to Nebraska is widely known, right? Like, he wasn't working out, he wasn't eating properly, he wasn't doing football drills up until, you know, he showed up on campus and then is juking people on the practice field. So in that sense, I mean, I can understand trying to not kill his body the first year here. But at the same time, like, I think his role will continue to grow. You saw last week against Wisconsin when they flexed him out wide. He has a serious advantage over linebackers and over safeties when they can put that running back out there. And you know, you saw the, whatever it was, the 30-yard catch that was, the guy got called for targeting. I mean, he went up in the air, caught it at the high point, got his feet down in bounds. It was a clean catch, and then he held on to the ball while getting absolutely blown up. Like, that was a really impressive play from a freshman running back to make. And so I think, you know, you're seeing these glimpses, and I think you will continue to see an expanded role, just because, you know, as much as they want to slow play him, like, you need his production on the field, especially now that Greg Bell is out and you know, you've lost a couple other guys. Like, you need his production if you're going to be, like, if you're going to do the things that you want to do this season. Because I don't think they're at the point where they say that this is a lost season. If that was the case, you'd see freshmen all over the place, and we haven't seen that yet. But back to your question, I think, getting off on a tangent, I think Mo will, we're not going to get 20 carries from him, but I think his role will continue to grow, and I think you'll see that a little bit more this week.
Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Derek, we are up against the break. I need 3 minutes from you on the other side on Nebraska basketball. I wanted to talk hoops with you. We haven't done that yet because it's been football and the strain in Oklahoma and Nebraska. So can we call you right back and take 3 more minutes with you? A few couple more minutes as you and Jacob hit Chi-Town for Big Ten Basketball Media Days. Derek Peterson on Nebraska basketball. When we come back, hang on, brother. We'll get back to you. Hail Varsity with you on a Wednesday continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
A few more minutes with Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. And Dr. Petey and Jacob Padilla off to Chicago with Hail Varsity, getting ready for Nebraska basketball. Derek, a thought here on this season, 70% of the offense is back. The core is returning. The hype and expectations are as high as they've been since the year that Walt Pettaway and Siobhan returned. That year didn't end well, and Nebraska completely under-delivered. Are you confident Nebraska can take a step back to the dance with Tim Miles this season?
Yes. I think the expectations for this year might even be a little bit more than that last team. What was it, 2014?
2013-2014 team that went to the tournament, 2014-2015 team that watched the tournament.
Right. I think this team, potential-wise, I mean they could win the Big Ten. I mean, they could win the Big Ten regular season title. I think that's how talented the top of this lineup is. The biggest thing with Nebraska this year is going to be, can you maintain health? We've already seen Carrington Davis, a freshman guard from St. Louis. He's out for the season with a torn Achilles tendon. We saw a little bit of practice a couple weeks ago, and he looked like a guy that can just stand out in the corner and knock down threes. That's really something that they need. The core is the same, but there's going to be a little bit of different contributors off the bench. With Carrington out, you're probably looking now at Thomas Allen, your sophomore guard, being your reliable three-point shooter outside of the top four guys. And that's kind of a dicey situation to be in. I'll be curious to see if they can play a 6'1 Thomas Allen and a 6' Glenn Watson Jr. on the floor together with kind of a two-point guard lineup. The biggest thing, though, is Isaiah Roby's foot. He's got plantar fasciitis in his foot. We saw him. It kind of flared up a little bit. He turned his ankle in that open practice. He is their center, and I think he is he's the engine that's going to make this whole thing go this season. He's such a talented forward. He's a little bit undersized if you want to play him as a traditional center for a full 40 minutes. But, if he is injured at any point this season, they don't have anybody behind him. You're relying then on Karen Borchardt or Brady Hyman, and I don't think you want to rely on Brady Hyman too much in, Big Ten play when you get into the meat of it. Keeping everybody healthy is going to be a big thing. But I think they've got the tools. You have a bona fide scorer in James Palmer Jr. You have a point guard that you trust and a senior in Glenn Watson. You have a guy in Isaac Copeland Jr. that can be kind of that secondary scoring option for a team. And I think a big thing for him and a kind of an underrated storyline heading into the season is his health. Obviously he was coming off surgery last year, coming off an injury, and he was, like Tim Miles talked about, he was a stand-and-shoot guy, a catch-and-shoot guy, and he's dunking right now in the preseason. So he's confident. He's comfortable. And then you've got Isaiah Roby who can, when they went small, when they went with Roby and Copeland as their two bigs, defensively they were really, really good. They were really switchy. They had I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they had a tremendous defensive rating with those two guys on the floor. And offensively that presents a lot of challenges for other teams. And you saw a ton of opposing coaches talk about how difficult it was to guard Nebraska when they have Isaiah Roby at the five, because they can play five out, they can play pick and roll, they can play spread pick and roll, they can do whatever they want. The biggest thing for them is going to be depth and making sure that guys stay healthy.
Yeah, speaking of depth, Derek, you mentioned Thomas Allen, but what other maybe guys coming in or younger guys like Thor and players such as that do you maybe presume to see on the floor a little bit more this season for the Huskers?
I think we could see, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce his name, Nana Akinton, Akinton.
Yeah.
I'm butchering his name, but he could be a guy, he strikes me as a guy that could be a pretty significant piece of their rotation this year. Amir Harris, freshman guard, 6'6", 200 pounds. He's really long. He can get after it defensively. I think he could be a real tool for them on the defensive side of the ball. The shot is definitely still a work in progress. The shooting mechanics look a little rough. But defensively, I think he could be a guy that they could throw out there with Palmer on the wing and have a pretty solid 2-3 defensive rotation with those two guys. So between him, between Thomas Allen, between Nana, I thought Carrington Davis was going to play a bigger role, but with the injury that kind of maybe that opens the door for Thor to come in and be kind of a knockdown shooter off the bench, because that's what they need. You're going to need guys. Defensively, I think they're going to be pretty good, but they're going to need guys that can come in and score. You saw Anton Gill play that role, and then he moved into the starting lineup later in the season, but they're going to need guys that can come off the bench and that can be offense. Thomas Allen is a guy that I think will fill that role nicely. I think he'll take a step, but if they can get a second guy, maybe that's Thor, I think that would be a huge boost for them.
It's Derek Peterson, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Derek and Jacob Padilla going to be in Chicago for Big Ten Basketball Media Days tomorrow. A full contingent of Huskers on hand with Tim Miles. Tim Miles will take the stand. That sounds ominous. He'll take the podium at 9 tomorrow. And Hail Varsity, you'll Facebook Live that for folks to stream, I take it?
Tim Miles will not be Facebook Live, but that video will be posted on YouTube and on our website.
Okay, great. And you and Jacob will crush it with interviews, reaction, and thoughts. And Nebraska's kind of a preseason top four, correct, based on some of the basketball outlets, the national outlets?
Yeah, they feel like in that 3-4 range. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much where people have settled in on.
All right, that's good. Well, I'm excited to follow you guys at Jacob Padilla _ on Twitter, at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. Follow both those guys with Hail Varsity. Hail Varsity, also the Twitter handle you can follow, and they'll get you covered in Chicago tomorrow, not only for Northwestern, but also for Big Ten Media Days. Derek, thanks for giving us a few minutes, man. We'll get caught up soon. Appreciate you.
Sounds good, brother.
Take care. There he is. See, and we went with the Bob Diaco picture when we announced on Twitter that Derek was coming up. Usually it's some sort of KD troll job I do with him, just because he's such an OKC Thunder guy. And God love him. Him and my kid both love the Thunder unconditionally. But I went with the Diaco this time, because it is soul-crushing him. That's how it is.
You just can't escape him year after year.
At least you don't have to cover him.
That's true. I don't know. I always got a kick out of him holding his mic up with his hand.
Here's the thing with Diaco. If he has the right talent, he'll look great.
That's also the first picture that comes up, him holding the microphone.
I know. It is what it is. We have Brad Edwards coming up 15 minutes away, and some college football. Get his take on some of the big games this weekend and from the past weekend. I promised you we'll hear from Greg Austin on the offensive line when it comes to how he's dealing with all them penalties. And he has some good thoughts. That next hour, great to be with you on Wednesday at a good Nebraska basketball preview. I don't know where you're at as a Nebraska basketball fan, if you're getting your hopes up or if you're tempering your expectations just because you got your hopes up in football. We'll continue with you. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
What final time this hour? It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt. By the Chicago is Danny Burke. Good stuff from Derek Peterson. Thoughts on Nebraska Northwestern as he is off to Chicago for Nebraska basketball's Big Ten Media Day tomorrow. Is Nebraska going to be in the spotlight? How do they handle that? Not just tomorrow, but this season. And I tell you, I grew up going to Nebraska basketball games during the knee era. And you had that breakthrough season when they went 26-8, I believe. They were a 3 seed. Pike was a freshman. You had Tony Farmer, Bo Reed, and they were incredible. They burst onto the scene. They were 10-19 the year before. And then you had that golden era of tournament runs where Nebraska had finished top four in the Big Eight, and then boom, they'd find their way into the NCAA tournament. They were unbeatable at the Devaney Center. And Nebraska has gotten much, much better at home. You know, they were really, really incredible at PBA last year, aside from Kansas, and that came down to a buzzer beater and the woulda, coulda, shoulda of last season. But 22 wins, nothing to sneeze at. And how it was done, think about the chemistry that came together, where you've got transfer guys that man, they got to show out and impress, right? They want to go play beyond college. But they're back. They want to work on their game. And they're back because they want to win. They're back because they want to win. They need to develop their game, but they want to win. And you've got a great group. You have some freakish talent. And it's as good as a season. This is probably the most – I mean, when you talk about anticipation, the year that Nebraska ended up winning the NIT, you had a bunch of guys as sophomores that were part of a Big Eight tournament championship team that underachieved. And they'll tell you this, and I'm talking Lou, and I'm talking Strick, and I'm talking Boone, and you had a bunch of dudes that, yeah, they cut the nets down in New York City, but that team was loaded. From an underachievement standpoint, you had Petaway's last season at Nebraska where, man, what could have been with that team? Because they were loaded. Who goes up and I mean, back-to-back just smoking Michigan State? You know how good those Spartan teams were. So it'll be interesting. Can they truly just play for one another? They've got the skill. They'll have the schedule. They'll have the home court because there is no party like the party that happens before and after Nebraska basketball wins. When it's cranked up, it's the hottest event in town. Football's king, yes, but basketball, people crave that. Think back to the no-sit Sunday moment you had. I mean, Nebraska can be that. They can be elite. They have pound-for-pound enough talent to stack up with most.
The main thing is they have to click together. Last season, not all core four players clicked together at once.
No.
And Glenn Watson needs to come back to his normal form as well.
Well, what are you going to ask Glenn? What are you going to ask Glenn to do? And Glenn's best scoring when he's off the dribble, right? Not catching and shooting. He's had a whole summer to work.
I mean, he's also adjusting to playing with these guys, too. That was a big mm-hmm. step for him. And he did well with that. He just couldn't put the ball in the net. That's all it was.
No, I know. No, you got to be excited. Got to be fired up.
Most excited I've been for a college basketball team probably in my life.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, it's here. It's going to be here. And Hail Varsity, you're going to have all the coverage from Chicago for you. Brad Edwards up next. Talk some college football on Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, it's Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Welcome in with ESPN College Game Day at ESPN Insider. Brad Edwards, at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, how's your week going, man?
Week's going well. Actually, believe it or not, I just had a conversation about Nebraska. You know, the way that season's going, you wouldn't think that. I was talking to Chris Felica, the Bear, on College Game Day. And we were discussing certain teams that are in natural letdown spots this week, and one of them is Northwestern, coming off the back-to-back Michigan-Michigan State games. And normally you would not overlook Nebraska, but given their record, it would be easy to do. And anyway, he was telling me what the point spread is on that game, and I was like, "You got to be kidding me! It's that low." And he said, "My message to everyone is stay away, because they are begging people to take Northwestern, but he likes Nebraska's chance given the situation."
You know, the Bears bit all over it. I watched game day, and I know you're a part of that. And we do our Friday forecast picks, and let's just say I need to listen to the Bear more often than just going out on my own. Danny Burke is an expert, my co-host here. I'm gonna gloss him with that expert title, but that's kind of where I'm at on Wednesday. And in each week, I've started off going, you know, what the H happened first of all Saturday, and by Wednesday or Thursday, I'm like, okay, if they do this, and this is where they can win. And I thought, you know, I don't think Wisconsin's that good. I know Nebraska's not even close to as physical as Wisconsin, so I knew that was going to be an issue. But Wisconsin's not vintage Wisconsin, and Nebraska had a couple of chances there. It's just the penalties, Brad, that undo Nebraska, and then the defense and the offense never get on the same page. Northwestern's a team that they're the ones that usually get overlooked, aren't they? I mean, Sparty thought they'd just show up and play last Saturday, and it didn't work out.
No, it didn't work out. Look, on the other side, it'd be easy not to take Northwestern as seriously because they lost to Akron. So, I mean, Northwestern is a tough team to figure out. But I think the bigger picture conversation here, Chris, is did we think we would ever reach a point where we would be discussing whether Northwestern isn't taking Nebraska seriously enough?
Like, no, I know. That's
where we are.
Hard to utter, isn't it? it's hard to talk. It's hard to say that way. But and Danny and I were talking about this, just going through the Big Ten. I mean, Nebraska right now, whether it's talent or confidence or depth or what have you, and you knew the schedule was going to be kind of a monster anyway, but the schedule was going to be a monster because you went to Michigan and you went to Wisconsin and you're going to Ohio State and you head to Iowa. I mean, it wasn't supposed to be that Troy comes in and whacks you, and it wasn't supposed to be that Purdue rolls up 42 on you. Man, some transitions are harder than others, and that is certainly the point to be nailed home, Brad, that who'd have thought, you know, think Nebraska's going to get overlooked? I mean, never, right?
Now, look, so, I mean, if there's a silver lining, it's this, is that one of the games that we talked about before the season that we thought would be a critical game for Nebraska's bowl eligibility was the home game against Sparty.
Mm-hmm.
And at least, like, the one thing Nebraska can kind of hang its hat on is that Michigan State does not appear to be nearly as good as people thought they would. I'm still holding out. And, look, I will completely acknowledge at this point that Michigan State's not – they're not contending for anything in the Big Ten. But I will be shocked if they don't at some point rise up and play above their heads and, you know, and beat someone who's good. Like they have too much experience, and they were too good of a team last year with all the guys coming back to not somewhere along the line just, you know, just go out there and put it all together one afternoon, and whether that's Michigan or Ohio State or whoever it is, I have a hard time believing that they're going to go out without throwing a punch this year.
Well, they're you're right. I mean, 19 starters, 10 wins last year, and close wins, like games that they had to figure out a way to win or seize, they did. I mean, they're at Penn State this weekend. Or does Penn State travel there? Let me scroll down here.
No, they're at Penn State.
Right. So I'm not putting money on that, although they're going to be all sorts of ticked off after what happened at home last weekend, so it might be a better game. Who do you think stings Ohio State this year? Does anybody?
Well, the interesting thing about them is that there's a glaring weakness on defense. Now, yeah. I mean, look, for a lot of teams in the country, they would – most of them would still take Ohio State's defense over what they have. But by Ohio State standards and relative to the talent they have on that defense, they're not playing well. And they are allowing way too many big plays, a lot of those resulting in touchdowns. And you just figure at some point, they don't get that fixed, it's going to get them beat. And, you know, they're at Purdue for how soon that game is. It may even be next week. But coming up at some point soon, they're at Purdue, and that's one where that's the first one where I can see a team having a chance. I don't know about Sparty. They do go to East Lansing, but at this point, it's hard to have confidence in them. But the way that Ohio State's blowing assignments defensively, you don't even necessarily have to be an explosive offense. I mean, I think Rutgers is the only team that at some point hasn't hit a really big play on the Buckeyes, and so. If Indiana can hang in there in Columbus for as long as they did, there's no reason that Purdue wouldn't have a puncher's chance in West Lafayette. There's no reason that Michigan State might not have a chance in East Lansing. And then, you know, even Michigan, which it has not really been a big play offense so far this season, against Ohio State they could make some big plays, especially if Nick Bosa isn't back.
Right.
So that's something to keep an eye on. Of course, Michigan is more capable than
most
teams in the country of holding Ohio State's offense in check where you're not having to score 40 to beat them.
Brad, I think it was last week on the show you mentioned after Notre Dame were to play Virginia Tech, their schedule isn't typically too hard after that. So now that they put the whopping down on Virginia Tech, are you ready to book the ticket for the Irish to make it to the college playoffs?
No, because Notre Dame has only one time in the last 24 years finished a regular season ranked in the top four. So there's too much recent history going against them to believe that they are going to run the table. I mean, certainly you could say that there's a really good chance they do, and then maybe go as far as to say that they should run the table. I mean, according to FPI, there's not a team left on their schedule that's in the top 35. It's not just there's not a ranked team in the AP poll. There's not a top 35 team by FPI they still have to play. The only two games that would really seem to be an issue are that it's a weird schedule, too, because they have the six remaining games. They're two home, two road, two neutral. They have Navy in San Diego, and then they have Syracuse at Yankee Stadium. The only two that I think would be a little bit concerning are the two road games, at Northwestern and at USC. And so if they can avoid those, then avoid an upset of those, and then they should finish undefeated. The one game, I mean, the question we're going to start having to ask, though, is could they afford a loss? I mean, is it possible that they could even get in an 11-1? Right now, I would say no. But the only thing I think I would say definitively is that the one game they absolutely cannot lose is the USC game because it's the last game. And, you know, they're not going to play on that conference championship game weekend. And if you've lost your final game and it was not against a team that's a playoff contender, like, how do you try to make an argument if you're on the selection committee for Notre Dame being one of the four best teams in the country if they've just lost their final game to a team that's not a top 20 team? Like, that's a tough sell. And so I think for Notre Dame, it's possible they could survive a slip-up somewhere else, but they can't lose the last game, and they really shouldn't lose any of them because they're playing well enough since the quarterback change that they're a lot better than the teams that are remaining.
Around the world of college football, Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider, College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards is where you follow him on Twitter. You hear him Saturdays on ESPN Radio with Matt Schick and Trevor Maddich. Okay, what happens with LSU? They host Georgia. Georgia's phenomenal. LSU just had a tough one in the swamp. That's a nice back-to-back crossover setup, isn't it, for LSU? Wow.
Yeah. Look, LSU, I don't think it's being overly dramatic to say their season is hanging in the balance here. Because
you remember,
over the summer. Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of people were saying this is a 7-5 team. And people were projecting them at 7-5, assuming that they would lose to Miami. They were assuming they would lose at Auburn. And LSU ended up winning both of those games, and of course they got to a point where people became way more optimistic about them than they were in August. And, you know, people, you know, kind of dismissed this possibility that they, you know, might not be too far, you know, too much different from what we thought they were. And after the Florida loss now, you look at the remaining schedule and you see, all right, they've got this three-game homestand, Georgia, Mississippi State, and Alabama. And while I would still favor them over Mississippi State, it's not a gimme. And they closed the regular season at Texas A&M. So there's still a chance that LSU, if they don't win one of these three games at home coming up, they could finish 7-5, right, where everyone thought they were going to be to begin with. But it's going to feel worse because of how they started. And it could end up being more damaging to Coach O because of how they started. So, This is a big spot, and maybe the Mississippi State game next week is the one that's actually bigger because people will expect them to win that game. They're not necessarily expecting them to beat Georgia, but let's look at the other side of it. If LSU does beat Georgia and they beat Mississippi State, and you know, then they at least go into the Alabama game knowing that if they pull the upset, their playoff hopes are still alive. I mean, no one's going to pick them to beat Alabama, but if they were to do it, and it's a night game at Tiger Stadium, crazier things have happened. You know, they would be in the driver's seat in the SEC West. So, like I said, a lot is riding on this Georgia game because whether LSU is actually playing for something beyond this Saturday or whether they're simply playing spoiler all comes down to whether they can beat Georgia.
Couple of thoughts here. A couple minutes left here, Brad. West Virginia at Iowa State. Iowa State's got their mojo back. It's probably cold right now in Ames. Oregon is hosting Washington. Those games are legendary, and Oregon is still smarting from that game they let slip away against Stanford. How do you see both of them shaking out?
I can easily see an upset in both of those. In fact, I'm probably going to pick Oregon to beat Washington. I was a little – look, I haven't been overly impressed with Washington this season anyway, and then, you know, them letting UCLA hang around the way that they did last week, especially after jumping out to an early lead and letting UCLA get back in the game, I don't have a lot of confidence in Washington. And that's a rivalry. That stadium is going to be hyped in Eugene. And then, West Virginia, it's a tricky spot. And I think people underestimate the effect of West Virginia having to make every road game they play in conference is a long trip. I mean, they're not getting on the bus and driving anywhere. They're no, you know, puddle jumper, you know, hour flights. Like these are all like, you know, pretty much cross country trips that they're taking. And so those wear on you after a while, and they didn't play well last week. I don't know if you saw much of that game.
Saw a little bit, and I was shocked that Kansas stayed around.
Kansas had the ball like late third quarter with a chance to cut it to seven. And I was not expecting that. Now, look, I mean, teams can have a letdown every now and then. And Kansas is not as bad as they have been in recent years. But that's still, like, if you're a top-10 team, that shouldn't be happening. So I'm not completely sold on West Virginia yet. And Iowa State, they're a tricky team. They're definitely not one you can take for granted.
Brad, we got about a minute left here. I wanted to get your take on the Red River Showdown this past weekend. A lot of people have been saying it, but I want to hear your opinion on it. Is Texas back, and are you a little concerned about Oklahoma, at least defensively?
Well, I was already concerned about Oklahoma defensively. It didn't take that game. I may be less concerned just because without Mike Stoops there, it's right. Possible that could change things. I don't want to put it all on him, but sometimes just a change of scenery can do good. With Texas, look, I guess what I would come back to is that in recent years, we have seen Texas upset Oklahoma and then turn around and look awful the rest of the season. So that's the next step for Texas, is to be able to handle prosperity, handle everyone patting them on the back. And look, they're a good team. They have talent, but they're not so good that they couldn't still lose to, you know, three or four teams remaining on their schedule. So this is going to be a big test for them. You know, are they ready to be able to handle being a favorite? That's what they've struggled with in recent years. And if you were to ask me right now, I think that the Big 12 is between Texas and Oklahoma. I like those two teams better than West Virginia. So I think we're going to have a second Red River game for the Big 12 title in early December.
Brad, you guys anywhere? About 15 seconds. You guys anywhere this weekend?
We are not. We are in Bristol, and we might have an abbreviated show because of baseball playoffs.
Gotcha.
Not sure, 4 or 5 hours, something like that. Short
okay.
Show, you know, only 4 or 5 hours.
Air quote, short show.
Yeah, exactly.
Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider. College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter, College Football Insider. Brad, have a great weekend, man. This was fun. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
All right. Always fun. Thank you, guys.
Take care. There he is. How about Nebraska being a topic of conversation with the Bear and Brad? The advice, stay the hell away. I told you. You got that feeling. This is the weekend. I've been saying, if you're playing the Schmitty drinking game, you're under the table, man.
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke.
That was awesome. Go around the world of college football with Brad Edwards. Some Nebraska flavor on the Northwestern contest. Don't forget tomorrow, the Pirate, Mike Leach, going to be with us at 5 o'clock. Gary Barnett on Northwestern. And Parker Gabriel, excited about that. We'll hear from Greg Austin in a moment. 80 years, you've been doing things the AgriGold way, over the decades. Together, you've built a brand that's truly different because of our knowledge, different because of our passion, different because we represent the voice of our customer, our true partners, providing customers with the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, and greater yield. For more information, visit AgriGold.com. Danny, did you see President Trump last night in Council Tucky?
I personally did not make the trip out, or I did not see the highlights either, though.
The highlights were pretty good. He was doing a Nebraska or Iowa, and it was a contest of, are there more Iowans or Nebraskans in Council Bluffs to see me? And when Iowa chimed up, he kind of went sideways. I think there's a folder in there that we can hear it under KFOR. But the point of it is every time he'd say the word Nebraska, I mean, it was a roar. It was, he'd stop in his tracks. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. It was funny for him to, not so much about you, Iowa, but then Nebraska really got after it.
Iowa. Nebraska.
Okay. And the you had Nebraska fans chanting Go Big Red, right? At the Trump rally, 7,000 in chains in Council Tucky. But then he got off on Coach Osborne, trying to relate to his louder audience, for sure.
Hey, wait a minute. I got to do that again.
He was in rare form rally-wise, but here's the Osborne part. Yes, I believe.
Where's Tom Osborne, huh? Where's Tom Osborne? Tom Osborne. All I know, it's Tom Osborne, right? All I know is for years, all he knew how to do is win, just win. I mean, how good a coach was that guy? You know, there's a guy, again, I don't know, I've never met him, but it's called No Talk, All Action. Isn't that nice? Now, all you did every year, you won. You better get going, Nebraska.
Parting shot. You better get going. Apparently somebody told him Nebraska's winless. How do you fix that? Penalties. Penalties. Greg Austin today on, well, how he's dealing with that. Cut 13 here. How's he, think about being Greg Austin for a minute. You're working with the linemen, and how do you approach that? Do you lose your mind? Do you talk very calmly? You show them film, but he had a pretty good take today.
You coach the issue. You know, I don't attack the result. I attack the issue. Like, what is the issue? You know, penalties keep coming up, and now, you know, as I get into the meeting room, I'm like, hey, this is why. You know, I attack the why. As a coach, you can sit up there and yell at the guys for the result, or you can say, hey, move your feet, don't grab, you know, keep your feet active, get your body in a position to where you're not called for holding. Or take the right set line, don't overset a kid and allow the kid to come inside of you, and you down, you grab him. So those are the things that, you know, we coach on the sideline. Those are the things that we coached even after the game. You just continue to coach through those situations, you know.
So here's why it happened. You didn't move your feet. You reached. You got beat inside. And you didn't want to get beat, so you reached and you held. And officials have a reputation on you. This is me, not him. And even if you breathe or look at a guy wrong, they're going to flag you. They will. I don't know how you can undo that reputation other than just be flawless. but you've had probably four or five penalties called on Nebraska the last two games. There's 21 to choose from, mind you. Not all on the offense, but a lot of them. There's a lot. There's three or four phantom penalties in there. But you've earned it, right? So now go earn it Saturday. Protect your quarterback. Run the football. More from Greg Austin addressing the penalty. Remember, it's the why. Why is it happening?
You can get mad all you want to. Now, I will get a little bit emotional, right, so to speak, when bonehead penalties come up, you know, like offsides and things like MAs, those things, like not being dialed in. Now, that's when I get a little bit, you know, pissed off. But generally speaking, when it's in the middle of the play penalty, then we have to continue to coach the technique, coach the set lines, and then go back and look at, you know, how we coach it and see if there's a new way of doing it that prevents us from being in those situations.
So if you're doing something stupid, he's going to lose his mind. That's very fair. Are you being better at snapping? There's been a couple instances, bless Tanner Farmer's heart, where there's been some low snaps. One of the big conversions, you had an errant snap where Adrian played hot potato, tipped it to himself, gathered and chucked it, and it worked out. But how's the snapping coming along with Tanner Farmer? Because that's who they're rolling with. Conrad's still number two. We'll get to Cam Jurgens in a moment. But are the snaps getting better?
And I'm on his ass about it now, you know, and I'm on the quarterback's ass. If the freaking ball is not where we want it to be, you better let him know, because, you know, we just don't need to be thrown off from a read, or, you know, our eyes to be on the ground when we're supposed to be looking at our routes or looking at the protection or making a protection call or making any adjustments within the play off of, you know, something like a snap error. You know, it's a very, in some cases, minor detail, but it's a major detail in terms of whether the play works or not.
He's right, and he's going to stay on top of it.
And I'm on his ass about it now, you know, and I'm on the quarterback's ass if the freaking ball is not where we want it to be.
He's so good after practice. Just looks you in the eye and, dude, snap the ball, get it to him. Greg Austin's been very, very upfront that it's on his guys about better starts with the offense. He knew it. Troy was going to be on the offensive line. It killed him with the penalties against Purdue and against Wisconsin. And that's where, right, you're looking for a better offensive performance. You're looking for more consistency on offense. That number needs to be minuscule when it comes to holding or false starts. You're going to have a mess up. I get it. But you can't kill big plays for a third week in a row. You can't do it. And it's trickled, right? I mean, you'd have some holding calls on the outside, or you had an unnecessary roughness on Foster against Troy. You cannot have a third week in a row where your offensive line is beat, is grabbing, is face masking, or looks or breathes on somebody wrong. Because that will bring you to that perfect season continuing the wrong way. Now, he is right on the money with how Nebraska finds a way Saturday morning. And that's that offensive start. We're out, not sure how the defense is going to be. Who the hell knows about special teams? You think punting will be better, right? But the offensive line is going to be key.
You know, if we came out the gate early on in the game as we did in the second half, then that game looks a little bit different, you know. So we got to find a way, you know, to click early, start fast, and then finish strong. We've been finishing strong, but we haven't started as fast as we need to, just generally speaking. And it starts again with my guys, and then it goes, you know, and it spreads out from there.
He's right. He's nails. starts with my guys. It's on us. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the future being bright. That was a narrative with Coach Frost. That's a narrative with Maurice Washington. That's a narrative with Adrian Martinez. It's a narrative with Spielman. Well, there has been some praise, and Coach McBride kind of kick-started things Monday on the Cam Jurgens move. Kevin Cooler mentioned it in the broadcast on BTN with Wisconsin. Greg Austin today asked about Jurgens, his move to center, and why it makes so much sense. We've talked to Cam Jurgens. A lot of us have covered him. We've watched him. Freaking beast. Incredible athlete. Incredible athlete. And you don't, I'm sorry, man, but you don't say, move a dude like that to center. I'm glad Nebraska's smart enough to see that and project, because that's how you win at Nebraska, is you develop and you project special talents on special spots. That's how important the center spot is. I get it. But, man, this was some pretty good praise, not just from Coach McBride, not just the decision to move Jurgens to center, but who they think he can become.
You know, he showed up and he's a tight end. And, you know, now, what you see is explosiveness now. You know, he'll take a guy on a freaking angle and finish him, you know, 5 or 10 yards, you know, from the line of scrimmage. So you saw the explosiveness. And then I can honestly, you know, tell you that it was Coach Frost doing, you know, with the initial, hey, you know, this guy can be the, you know, second coming of Dave Remington, you know. So that's a, you know, that's a big name to throw out. But and when he threw it out, I was like, come on, Coach, like, you know.
Come on, Dave Remington is the best center ever to play football, period. And they said Dave Remington.
Dave Remington now. And we've been, you know, working with him. And he's done a great job. He was like, man, he's explosive. He's quick. He's powerful. He's gritty. He's nasty. You know, all the things that you would probably describe David Remington in his day.
Yeah, you would. Guy was the offensive player of the year, for God's sake, in the Big Eight. Good luck, Cam.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Chris. Good to be home.
It's good to see you and spend some time with you. You got fantasy football going on. Full disclosure, I'm 1-4. I've been dealing with some injuries and just some disgruntled running backs that reside in the Berg. We'll just leave it at that. But you have a number of teams putting guys on the IR, and one of the injuries that always seems to happen any year is the Achilles tendon injury, Dr. Doug. And you got a guy in Richard Sherman that's bounced back and played pretty well with that injury. And then you have other guys that have suffered from it this year, and they're going to have to go through the rehab process. We haven't talked about an Achilles injury for a while. And touch on how more common it's been. I mean, you see more and more Achilles tendon injuries in football, don't you?
Yeah, it really has become a more common thing, especially among younger players. You know, we used to think more about the weekend warrior kind of a player as being the person that would get an Achilles injury, and the classical teaching about that is that you get a tendinosis or a breakdown of the tendon that's occurring, and people are starting to have some symptoms, and then they have one big episode and boom, the Achilles tears. But we're seeing this, you know, in a younger and younger demographic as time goes along. For me personally, the youngest person I've ever had to fix an Achilles on is a 19-year-old. Mm. That certainly is not the scenario of a worn-out tendon that, you know, that just kind of let loose and tore. That's more of a true trauma. And I think that's why we're seeing it in football, too, is the same kind of a thing. It's a real trauma instead of a worn-out tendon that kind of finally let go.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Achilles injuries in the NFL, and you nailed it. I mean, it is the hit after the plant or trying to break when you have that leg planted versus being in your early to mid-30s playing ball and you're Dan Marino, right, where you set and you try and fire an out route and you hear and feel the pop. From a pain standpoint, is it one of the more, I mean, it's just gruesome to think about, but is it one of the more painful, or is it something that guys can deal with from a pain threshold standpoint in comparison to, say, like when you hurt your knee, right?
I mean, yeah. So, you know, with a like an ACL injury, there's a huge number of nerve endings in the ACL. It's one of the more painful structures in the knee when you injure it. And then when you have the ACL tear, the femur and the tibia will bang against each other, and you always get a bone bruising scenario, which is basically like bleeding or fracturing within the bone. And so those are very uncomfortable, painful injuries. With the Achilles, there can be scenarios where the pain is quite dramatic, but for a lot of the guys, it's more of this just gut-wrenching sense of, oh boy, I know I've done something here. You know, it's all of that kind of a nauseating kind of a thing. And you know, a lot of times people will get up and they'll try and walk it off, you know, because they think, yeah, okay, you know, yeah, I heard it, but, you know, I think I can get on it. And then the realization sets in that it just isn't there.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Achilles injury. So from your perspective, take me through your procedure when it comes to sewing up and healing up an athlete that has an Achilles injury.
Yeah, so the general treatment in athletes is going to be a surgical one, going in and repairing that. So we don't typically have to get MRI scans or anything like that in order to make that diagnosis. Usually if the Achilles is torn, it's a pretty obvious thing. And so we'll typically go ahead and open that up surgically. And what you see is kind of if you took a braided rope and you pulled on it so hard that it finally exploded, and it would just be like mop ends, you know, looking at you. So it's not like it's a clean cut. And so this is always a make it up as you go operation, because you're trying to bring these different strands of tissue back together, sewing it back together, and trying to get the tension on the muscle correct, and not overly tighten it or not leave it too loose. Your calf muscles, your gastrocnemius muscle, and your soleus muscle. Those muscles, if they're not under appropriate tension, then they don't provide as much strength to push off. On the other hand, if they're too tight, then you can't function very well either. So it is kind of an artsy operation. Now, there is a place for non-operative treatment with Achilles tendon injuries, and quite honestly, this is one of the areas that may be changing in orthopedics over the course of the next decade of time. There's been more and more evidence that you can treat these non-operatively, and doing that with immobilization for a short period of time and then early functional rehabilitation. So there's some changes going on with this one.
Explain, because it's always been, like you touched on with the rope example, where you just kind of got to put it back together and sew it back together and then rehab it. But how is it now more of a, how is there a non-operative option now? I know you talked about immobilization, but does stuff just grow back together on its own? Does it heal that way?
Yeah, so the issue with the Achilles is that it's surrounded by a fairly significant layer of tissue that the Achilles is sort of a tube, or excuse me, is inside of a tube, if you want to think about it that way. And so if the tearing all stays inside of the tube, is it possible then for the body to jump the gap, if you will,
sure,
and get that to heal up? And there's been progressively more evidence to suggest that that can happen and still have a good functional outcome. It used to be that we would say that the likelihood of re-tearing the Achilles tendon, if you treated it non-operatively, was significantly higher than if you fixed it operatively. And I think that at this point, the state of the art in orthopedics is still, we're going to fix these Achilles tendons until the evidence becomes very clear that we can treat them non-operatively and get just as good a function without re-tears. We're not quite there yet, but it is emerging that direction.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday, and some new news on the Achilles tendon. And it's going to be a prevalent injury as we continue on through this NFL season and beyond. Dr. Doug, great to get caught up again. Thanks for a few minutes on this info.
You bet. Take care, Chris.
Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. And we'll wind down a Wednesday with you on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago. Brett emails in again. Chris at HailVarsity.com. You're on a roll, Schmidt. You got App State right last night. That was a mighty dog. One outright by, what, 24?
Yeah, we both said you can't go against
App State. You can't sleep on Appalachian State. Who did they almost beat this year? Penn State, right?
Was it Penn State?
It was Penn State week one. Yeah.
I know it was week one. I couldn't remember who it was against.
You have to watch the whole thing because, you know, it was lightning outside.
Oh, that's right. Okay. It rings a bell now.
Then he's like, I don't know. You know, I was drunk. Kidding. You were upright and bushy-eyed.
Of course.
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Do you like cooking Thanksgiving dinner? And if you don't, I'm not going to judge you. I haven't had my wife host Thanksgiving for 15 years.
I love eating it.
I like eating it, too.
I've never cooked it except my roommates and I. We kind of did a pre-Thanksgiving a couple years ago. I didn't do the majority of the cooking, though. I more bought the dessert.
Gotcha.
So I do cook, though, for myself, just not a whole Thanksgiving meal.
No, I get it. That's a lot of leftovers. What I'm telling you this for is Wilderness Ridge, always open to the public, and they're going to give you something to be thankful for. That is Thanksgiving Day. How about Thanksgiving Day for you when it comes to the Wilderness Ridge Thanksgiving Day brunch? All right. Just get the old feed bag ready. Leave your waiter a tip and get out. Leave the cooking to Wilderness Ridge. Gather the family and join for brunch on Thursday, November 22nd from 11 to 3. You'll still get home in time for either the second half of the Lions or Cowboys game. And think about the headache. And think about the in-laws. And think about the relatives that you may or may not be thankful for. But I'm telling you, make reservations today with Wilderness Ridge Thanksgiving Day brunch, 11 to 3, 402-434-5118. There you go. Problem solved.
You know who you are, Schmitty, or who at least I envision you as around a turkey? The dad from A Christmas Story, just waiting to dive into it.
See, we smoked a big, big turkey last year. Uncle Andy, when I say we, they used my smoker when it was working at the time.
Better times.
And it was wonderful. I mean, it was 55 degrees Thanksgiving Day. He came over. We poured some Crown. We started the smoker up, and we watched football.
Do you guys do a turkey bowl?
No.
No?
The other thing we've done is we've gotten some smoked turkey breast, like a 30-pound smoked turkey breast from our homies up in Omaha. Kenny, That's the best turkey I've ever had in my life. Mm. It was idiot proof. All I had to do was throw it in the oven. Didn't dry out. Tasted like ham. It was so juicy. Yeah, now I'm getting hungry for turkey.
Yeah, I know, me
what,
too.
What would you punt? What part of Thanksgiving Day spread would you punt?
Ooh.
You're not a stuffing guy. Do you like the succotash? Like, do you like the cranberry sauce? I like cranberries.
You know, see, I didn't eat the cranberries for the longest time, but hot take, I like the cranberries out of the can versus just like the homemade ones better. Because we have both at our Thanksgiving.
See,
so.
And the ones that go to the made from scratch approach, good effort, wasted drive.
Yep.
Right? Just kick.
So you're a can guy then?
Let the ocean spray do the work.
Exactly. No, but I pretty much like the majority of everything. I've gained
38 pounds just talking about Thanksgiving today. Mike Leach, the Pirate, is going to be with us tomorrow. Gary Barnett with us tomorrow. Parker Gabriel with us tomorrow. We'll talk to you at 4. Thanks.